From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Well, most of us have been touched in some way by Alzheimer's disease or other types of dementia. Tens of thousands of people in our region are living with dementia, and that has a profound impact on their loved ones, many of whom are also caregivers. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on In Conversation, we have three guests with us who work with patients, families, and caregivers, and who study dementia. We'll talk about advances in treatment, plus available support and educational services, and what impact COVID-19 is having on the development of dementia and dementia patients. Call us this hour with your questions and comments as we discuss Alzheimer's disease specifically and dementia in general on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. It's good to have you with us today, and we're going to focus today our attention on dementia, including the illness we most associate with dementia, Alzheimer's disease. It's been called the long goodbye, and it can be a long, difficult, and frustrating time for patients, families, and caregivers. And today we have three guests with us who work in all aspects of this area, including treatment, prevention, research, and support for families, among other things. Shannon White is with us. Shannon is a chapter executive for the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. She provides strategic direction and administrative oversight for the chapter. It employs 13 individuals and provides service in 125 counties covering most of Kentucky, as well as Southern Indiana, as far west as Evansville. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Good to have you with us. Dr. Heer Moon is with us as well. Dr. Moon is associate professor at Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. Her research centers on the study of physical and mental health of older adults, the consequences of stress related to caregiving of people with chronic illness, including early-stage Alzheimer's disease and the transition of care within a family context. And Dr. Moon, good to have you with us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me today.
And please welcome Dr. Greg Cooper, Medical Director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute and Chief of Adult Neurology at the Norton Neuroscience Institute. He joined the Institute in 2021 as Chief of Neurology and Medical Director of the Memory Center. And he has previously practiced at the Sanders Brown Center on Aging at the University of Kentucky and the Baptist Neurology Center. And also, he was at the University of Iowa Hospitals, was director for a time of the Memory Disorders Clinic. Dr. Cooper, good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, of course, we wanted to hear from you. Call us with your questions or comments. Do you have a friend or family member dealing with Alzheimer's or other dementia? How are they and their caregivers dealing with it? Whatever you're comfortable talking about, we'd love to hear from you and to share your experience. Call us at 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet. WFPL News is our handle. And we're reachable through Facebook as well. Let me start with you, Dr. Cooper, and talk about the vernacular we're using here. We talk about Alzheimer's and dementia. Now, Alzheimer's is one form of dementia, right? And there are many forms of dementia. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. When we think of dementia, think of that as a very broad or almost an umbrella term. It refers to a disorder of cognition. That may be memory, it may involve language, it may involve judgment, any number of things, to a degree that is truly impairing our ability to function day to day. Alzheimer's disease then is the most common form of that, but there are other forms like vascular dementia, dementia with Lewy bodies, and so on.
And I forgot what website I was looking at, but there was almost like two dozen forms of dementia. There are quite a few different diagnoses, right?
Yes. I remember back when I trained, it used to be said there were over 120.
Wow.
Of course, most of those are quite rare. the great majority fall within four categories. It would be Alzheimer's disease, vascular disease, Lewy body disease, and then there's another sort of collection that are called frontotemporal dementias as well. And those would constitute the majority, the great majority of dementias.
Shannon White, let me turn to you, and we'll come back to you, Dr. Cooper, and talk more about the various diseases themselves. The Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Tell us a little bit about what your organization does and the services you provide.
Absolutely. So we provide community education programs. A lot of times we'll have companies, financial institutions, first responders across the state that are really looking for additional information in case they see things. And so we have one of our most popular programs is the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's. So we've done that in banks and schools and plumbing companies and things like that. And we also have support groups for those living with Alzheimer's and their caregivers to support them during the different stages of Alzheimer's. And one thing that we see is how profoundly this disease affects caregivers as well. There's so much focus on supporting those that are living with the disease, but we see such an impact on caregivers too. So we have support groups and education programs all across the state and Southern Indiana that really support both.
Do you have an estimate on how many people are affected by dementia and live with it or diagnosed with it, and how many caregivers and others, the family members, are involved in their care?
We do. There are approximately 75,000 people living with Alzheimer's currently across Kentucky and about 110,000 in Indiana. And then the best way to think about it is it's about double that number. So 150,000 caregivers in Kentucky and then 220,000 across Indiana.
So we associate, I think many of us associate Alzheimer's with older age, but it can affect someone not a senior citizen, right?
Absolutely. It's now the sixth leading cause of death. And even though most people think that this is an older disease, we're seeing more and more frequently that this is affecting people under 65. People are getting young onset or early onset Alzheimer's, and it's really affecting people across different age ranges.
We'll talk much more about that. I want to turn to you, Dr. Hira Moon, at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville, because you bring the social work aspect into this. We talked about you study the physical and mental health of older adults, but you also research quality of life and health disparities among racially and culturally diverse older adults and their families. Tell us a little about your work at the Kent School.
Oh, okay. I mean, just want to say, as you know, our U.S. population ages and become more diverse, we expect more adults with dementia, right? And also, at the same time, we expect more racial minority older adults with dementia. So the burden is really, will be dramatically increased. So what we did in this, at Kent School, I mean, before I talk about our studies, I wanted to acknowledge my colleagues, Dr. Sunshine Rhodes, Dr. Cheryl Moore at Kent School of Social Work, and also Dr. Amy Kosletic at the University of East Kentucky. So we needed really more information. We realized that we needed more information on needs of dementia caregivers from diverse backgrounds, like they can be race, ethnicity, or living arrangement, or geographical factor, living in rural or versus urban. So in order to plan, develop more effective strategy, and ultimately reduce dementia care burden of dementia caregivers in Kentucky. So as a first step, we really need a better understanding of caregivers' needs and service delivery preferences. So what we did is first study was we actually conducted two studies recently, but both studies were completed before the global pandemic. But anyway, the first study was African-American caregivers living in Louisville. We tried to explore the positive and negative aspects of dementia caregiving and service preferences and needs among these African-American dementia caregivers in Louisville, Kentucky. So what we found was some of positive caregiving, aspects of caregiving, identified by these our African-American caregivers, like focus on individual and family functioning, like religion-based coping, love of care recipient, the help with instrumental care tasks and banking or managing or medication from other families. And also, we were able to identify some of the challenging aspects of caregiving, like, you know, individual level, like time constraint, at the family level, like lack of support, at the community level, like the high cost of former care and lack of knowledge around options and resources. So then we realized that, like, Dr. Rhode and I, our research team kind of expanded our study with dementia caregiving in Kentucky to understand the risk factor for poor dementia caregivers, their health and service needs to develop community-based and need-based intervention strategy for reducing, care burden. So we partner with the University of Kentucky Cooperative Extension Service and Alzheimer's Association in Louisville. So we conducted an online survey with the caregivers in 2019. So again, it's before the global pandemic. So what we found was, like, less than half of Kentucky dementia caregivers report utilization of former care services. But the more than 65 of dementia caregivers in Kentucky report that they would like to learn more about most former services option, like counseling, skill training, and support group and caregiver education. I really want to highlight one of our major findings, which shows significant gaps between services that dementia caregivers are interested in and then services that dementia caregivers are currently using. So, for example, like caregivers are likely to have counseling about 80% and care management skill training to increase their skills of caregivers about 80%. However, but we realize that only 10% of caregivers, dementia caregivers, actually use or have used those services like counseling and support groups. So, there are some big gaps between service available and or actually needed services.
I guess I can pose this question to all three of you, but I'll start with you, Shannon. Does Alzheimer's strike across all racial and socioeconomic lines? Are some people more at risk at getting it in your experience than others?
No, it does seem to be across the board. And I think that's a really good point that you said before, that only 10% of caregivers are reaching out to support groups. And we found sort of a blessing and a curse in the pandemic that there's something to be said for in-person and getting that community support in-person in your community with people who know exactly what you're going through. But we did see that through the pandemic that people were able to log on to a Zoom support group and easier than having to worry about transportation or getting somewhere and finding someone to watch their loved one living with Alzheimer's if needed. So it was kind of a blessing and a curse. But we do see that there is Alzheimer's is affecting people across urban, rural, social, economic, and racial lines.
We're going to talk much more about this. We are discussing Alzheimer's disease and dementia with three guests today on In Conversation. You just heard Shannon White, chapter executive for the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Also with us is Dr. Hira Moon, who is associate professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. And Dr. Greg Cooper is with us as well, medical director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute and chief of adult neurology at the Norton Neuroscience Institute based here in Louisville. We want to take your calls, your questions, and comments. Give us a call, 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. You can send us a tweet if you'd rather do it that way, or you can reach out to us through Facebook. We'll be back with much more after a break. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett, and today we are talking about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. We have three guests with us today, Dr. Greg Cooper, Medical Director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute here in Louisville. Shannon White is with us, Chapter Executive for the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, and Dr. Hira Moon, Associate Professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville, has been talking about her research and her work there at U of L. We want to hear from you, too. Call us with your questions and comments. 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Send us a tweet, WFPL News, and we'll reach out through Facebook. Let me come back to you, Dr. Cooper. And we were talking before the show about, signs that whether you are coming, you are showing symptoms of Alzheimer's, or you have a normal brain that's doing things that normal brains do sometimes when they're overwhelmed. At what point, what are some of the symptoms, the early symptoms of Alzheimer's or dementia that that we should worry about, to the point where we need to seek help?
That's a great question. And it is a little bit difficult because many of the signs or symptoms we see in dementia can be perfectly normal as well. It's a matter of degree. So certainly if we are seeing changes in memory, and in particular recent or short-term memory, that can be a concern. But if we occasionally forget our keys or occasionally forget why we went into another room, that's likely normal. On the other hand, if we're frequently forgetting things, and in particular our families are noticing it, that it then becomes a concern of our friends or families even more so than for us, that moves us into a greater level of concern, and things really need to be checked out. Other common symptoms would be more difficulty coming up with words or expressing our thoughts. Again, it's not just that typical tip-of-the-tongue phenomena that we all experience, but more frequent pauses trying to get the right word, more difficulty navigating, getting lost, driving in a previously familiar area, and maybe more difficulty handling our day-to-day things around the house, like managing our finances. When we start having problems with that, that raises a concern. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a problem, but when there's a significant change, and in particular when those around us are noticing it, that would raise an alarm for me.
So if you see a patient and you make a diagnosis of either Alzheimer's or some other type of dementia, what types of drugs are now available? I know there's been a lot of research going on and a lot of money raised for research, but where do we stand now in terms of treatments?
Well, right now we have four medications that would be considered symptomatic. They don't reverse the disease, but they help with the symptoms. And they fall generally in two classes. So one class are called cholinesterase inhibitors. These are medicines like Aricept, Exelon, and Razadine. And all of them help. All of them help modestly, typically, and improve memory to some degree. And then there's another class, which really includes only a single medication called Namenda, or memantine is the generic name for it. And the story is similar there, that it typically has a modest effect either in improving cognition, memory, or in slowing down that progression. So those are the primary medications that we have available to us. Now, very recently, over the summer, the FDA approved a new medication called Aduhelm. And that's a medication very specifically targeted to Alzheimer's disease. It's targeted towards a protein called amyloid, which many of us feel is the root cause of Alzheimer's disease. And it helps clear that protein out of the brain. Without question, it clears that protein out of the brain. There is some controversy about whether that translates to real benefit or not, and we're still really in the early stages of trying to understand this medication better.
You know, I saw a video the other day of a woman who's caring for her mother, and I think she was feeding her or something, and her mother suddenly had a moment of clarity and recognized her and said something, very sweet to her. But I'm just wondering, is it possible for that to happen for a longer term, for the brain somehow to reconnect?
That, unfortunately, typically won't occur long term, but there certainly are sort of little windows, little moments like that where maybe for reasons we don't entirely understand, something triggers a memory in us, something triggers something within our brain that will allow us to brighten for a moment. And oftentimes that may be something like music or a smell or a taste, something that even we may not be able to put our finger on it, triggers some earlier memory, and you'll see us brighten up in a moment like that.
502-814-TALK is our number if you have a question or comment for our panel about Alzheimer's or dementia. 502-814-8255. Again, you can send us a tweet. WFPL News is our handle, and you can reach us through Facebook. We have a call. Ron is in Louisville, and Ron, welcome to In Conversation.
Thanks very much. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you. What's on your mind?
My wife has Huntington's disease. She's probably lived over for 25 years, but for the last 17 years, she was completely disabled. She fell while we were on vacation, and she never walked unaided again. I was her primary caregiver for 17 and a half years. And my biggest problem was the Adult Protective Agency. They seemed to make trouble for people just to justify their jobs. Then they got other agencies, city agencies involved in it. And you know, my housekeeping wasn't the best because she was my biggest concern. Mm-hmm. And it cost me thousands of dollars. We were out of our house for about a year. They said it wasn't safe for her. Hell, we were living there fine. Everybody was happy. Hospice was happy. And that, I don't know, it is to justify their safe job, they just make trouble for people.
Well, Ron, thank you for the call. And Shannon, let me turn to you. What's the role of Adult Protective Services and that agency in caregiving in relation to what you do?
Well, I think one thing that's really important to focus on here is the struggle that caregivers go through, that this disease is not only fully killing the person that's living with Alzheimer's, but we're seeing that it's having such an incredible impact on the caregivers, too, and that what they really need is more support, more resources, and more people to talk to and connect to across the state to get the resources and services that they need. So I don't know much about Adult Protective Services, and I'm sorry that Ron went through that. That sounds traumatic on top of already he's struggling taking care of his wife. But really, I think that his point is well made, that our caregivers really need to have more connection to others and quicker and easier connection to additional supports and resources.
Yeah, I knew a caregiver and said her number one wish was just an occasional day off, just to have that time to herself because of the strain.
Right, right. And we see that too. And when we talk to families, we remind them that there are organizations and there are locations and facilities across the city and the state that give people short respite breaks so you can get away for a day or a week, or there are home health agencies that can come in and give you that break that you need. But I think that it's so important to not only reduce the stigma of Alzheimer's, but also to find ways that we can be more supportive to unpaid caregivers.
502-814-TALK is our number. We have another call. Christine is in Louisville. Hello, Christine. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Couple quick questions. How does somebody go about having their loved one evaluated, diagnosed with dementia? Where do you go? I'm in Louisville, obviously. And then where are these supports that you're discussing, the resources, the support groups, the caregiver counseling? How do you find those?
Okay, let's start with the evaluation. Dr. Cooper, can you address that?
Yeah, sure. I think there are a couple ways that can be done. Certainly, if you have a good relationship with your primary care provider, that's a good place to start. And very often, they can do a very nice job. If they're not comfortable or prefer, they can refer to a specialist as well, like myself or a geriatrician. If that pathway isn't working, then I think it's always reasonable to contact a specialist like myself directly and just make a self-referral in that way.
And Christine's second question was about resources, I think. Shannon, can you take that?
Yes, absolutely. So our website is alz.org, And then if you want more specific locally resources and support groups, you can go to alz.org/KYIN, so Kentucky, Indiana. And we have online and in-person programming all across the state, every week, every day, all month. And then one really great thing is on alz.org, there are some recorded programs. So there's the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's, caregiver support, community education programs, understanding Alzheimer's and dementia, communication strategies, things like that. So our website is a really great first stop to look for things.
Christine, thanks so much for your call. I hope that information was helpful to you. 502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. Again, you can send us a tweet at WFPL News, and we're on Facebook. Dr. Ahir Moon at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville, what's your assessment and what's the Kent School's assessment of the resources that we have available in our region for people, for the thousands of people who are either suffering from this or their caregivers?
That's a great question. So, I mean, so are you in Kentucky, like, you know, like you, there are resources available like through Alzheimer's Association or Kentucky Regional Planning Development Agency, AKITA. Mm-hmm. And also our researchers are always, I mean, we are here to help, with caregivers. I mean, if you guys, community members can reach out to myself or some of my colleagues, and then we always love to share our resources with, the caregivers or whoever need information.
And Shannon at the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, how does the association operate? How does it get its funding?
That's a great question. So we are funded by grants and fundraisers and really individual donations across Kentucky and Indiana. And we have our largest event tomorrow, actually, the Louisville Walk to End Alzheimer's is at Lynn Family Stadium tomorrow. And we have over 1,000 participants that are registered and close to 200 teams that are coming. And what is so great about our Walk to End Alzheimer's events, we have 12 of them across the state, is it is our largest support group as well. Because when people get there, not only does it support our organization with fundraising, but it also is a chance for families to connect and reconnect with each other, especially after the past year and a half during the pandemic. And it's a way for people to get together, and you don't have to say very much. When you're a caregiver or a family member of someone living with Alzheimer's, you can just make eye contact, and you're finally around people who totally understand it without having to say much. So we're really looking forward to that event tomorrow and can't wait.
And let me ask you about the number of people that you're serving there, or the number of people getting diagnosed, because we have, of course, the baby boomer population is getting older, and we're seeing a larger number of older folks. Has the number of diagnoses, the number of people you see, has that been proportional to that? Has that been on the increase as well?
I think we are seeing that on the increase. I know that my grandfather had Alzheimer's back in the 90s, and it took a really long time for him to get the official diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And I think now the diagnosis is coming quicker in the process of Alzheimer's throughout the different stages. So we are seeing additional and more frequent diagnosis of Alzheimer's. I think Dr. Cooper could talk to that as well.
Go ahead, Dr. Cooper.
Yeah, I would absolutely have to agree with that. So the overall numbers of individuals with Alzheimer's disease, unfortunately, just continues to grow and is going to, double just in the next 20 or 30 years. With that said, as our awareness is better, I think we do a much better job of making this diagnosis. And I certainly see people earlier in their course than I did 15 or 20 years ago. So I think that's probably a good trend. I will also say on one point of optimism, while the total numbers of individuals with Alzheimer's disease are undoubtedly growing, our overall risk may be starting to come down as we do a better job of receiving good medical care, lowering our vascular risk factors. So the total numbers are higher, but there do seem to be things we can do to help decrease our individual risk, and we're starting to see a little bit of that.
is so Alzheimer's could be hereditary, given the other maladies that you may have that contribute to Alzheimer's could be hereditary. It can be more common in families that where you've had an older person have it.
Yes, that's absolutely right. If you have a first-degree relative, so this means a sibling or a parent, then the risk is approximately double what it would be if you didn't have a first-degree relative. That doesn't mean that we're destined to get Alzheimer's disease or not get it, but certainly there's a strong genetic or heritable risk.
Dr. Moon, have you found any correlation in your work at the Kent School of Social Work with environmental factors or geographical factors? Have there been any numbers, any research done based on where people live or what they're exposed to?
Oh, that's a great question. So for our Kentucky online survey, we looked at the geographical factor, whether there's any differences in terms of needs among caregivers, dementia caregivers. But we found no differences between whether they live in rural versus, you know, living in urban area. So, I mean, again, like we have to really, yeah, so all caregivers, I mean, these caregivers need, help, you know, help with from former services or other services of, through trusted organizations and agencies.
And let me come back to you on kind of those same lines, Dr. Cooper. Are there preventive measures that can be taken earlier in life? Obviously, avoid the unhealthy things, smoking and excessive alcohol use and that sort of thing. But are there other things we can do?
There are, and I think this is very interesting. It's recently been stated that approximately 40% of dementia is preventable, meaning there are a lot of things that we can do to lower our risk. Much of that revolves around vascular risks, the same things that put us at risk for heart disease or stroke. So, as you mentioned, smoking, keeping blood pressure under control, having a good, healthy diet, getting exercise, all of those things seem to lower our risk significantly. There is also a lot of thought in addition to that, that being mentally active and being socially active, engaged in some way, further mitigates or lowers our risk of developing dementia.
You are listening to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett, and we are talking today about dementia and Alzheimer's disease specifically, but other types of dementia as well. And our guest, you just heard Dr. Greg Cooper, Medical Director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute. He's also Chief of Adult Neurology at the Norton Neuroscience Institute. Shannon White's with us, Chapter Executive for the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. And Dr. Heer Moon, Associate Professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. We have a couple of callers waiting, and we'll get to them when we come back from our break. We want to hear from you, too. 502-814-TALK, 502-814-8255. Back with more after a break. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett, and we are talking about Alzheimer's disease and dementia on today's program. Our guests are Dr. Greg Cooper, Medical Director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute. Shannon White from the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association is with us, as well as Dr. Heer Moon, Associate Professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. We're talking about Alzheimer's and dementia causes, treatments, educational programs, help for caregivers, help for families. And we want to hear from you. 502-814-TALK is our number. If you have a question or comment, want to share your situation with us, we'd love to hear from you. 502-814-8255. And we have on the phone, if I bring up my screen here, Charlene is in Louisville. Charlene, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Rick. I also wanted to point out that there was a show on 60 Minutes, and there's been lots of articles about Tony Bennett, how this guy is 90-some years old, has lost his memory, and yet gets up on stage and sings songs from 40, 50 years ago, flawlessly. Well, nah, he had a couple flaws, but he did it very, very well right. for 95. And yep. music, they found out, addresses several parts of the brain. I'm practicing PA in North Carolina for over 40 years. My own mother had end-stage dementia. I sang a song to her that she sang when I was a child, and she joined in months before she died. But thank you for addressing this.
Yeah, thank you for the call. It reminds me of Glenn Campbell, who went on tour, you know, after his diagnosis, yeah. and his daughter, you know, helped him through when he had some difficult moments. But talk about that, Dr. Cooper. Talk about the role of music in this.
Yeah, I saw that segment as well. So thank you for bringing that up, Charlene. It's a fascinating area, and I think to some degree it speaks to the complexity of the brain. And the complexity of memory by itself. So when we think of Alzheimer's disease as a disorder of memory, that's true. But what it really, at least early on, is a disorder of learning. We have difficulty forming new memories. Music often represents memories made long ago. It often is a different type of memory. And that's an area that may be relatively preserved. So with Tony Bennett, what you see is that we're tapping into areas of the brain that are relatively intact. And I think it was really a beautiful example of how we shouldn't think of Alzheimer's disease people with Alzheimer's disease too simplistically. Yes, they have a disorder of learning, short-term memory, and they may have other aspects, but that's not to say that there aren't many aspects of their cognition, many aspects of their very person that aren't intact. And again, I thought that was a beautiful segment on 60 Minutes.
And it must be difficult as a caregiver and frustrating to when you're having a conversation with someone to try to maybe jog their memory and say, well, can't you remember this? No, you've got that fact wrong. You kind of have to go along with what they're saying, right?
You really do. It's not their fault that they don't remember something. It's typically not because they're not trying hard enough. It is because that part of their brain isn't working as well as it used to. And I don't think there's any reason to beat people up over that. We need to treat each other with a bit more compassion and understanding.
And Shannon White with the Alzheimer's Association, can you talk a little bit about the financial hurdles that caregivers and families face when their loved one is diagnosed with Alzheimer's? It must be, I mean, some, I guess, have the benefit of Medicaid, but others, or Medicare, rather, or Medicaid, but some don't, right?
Right, that's correct. And I also just want to talk a little about the Tony Bennett 60 Minutes piece as well. And we have social engagement programs, too. We have a partnership with Speed Art Museum, and we take our families and caregivers to the Speed Art Museum, or they do it virtually. We also have a baseball remembrance program, and we also do a lot of music programs as well. And we see the same sort of thing that Dr. Cooper just talked about. But the financial hurdle is significant. It really varies across the spectrum of people, whether they can have in-home care or whether they have a loved one that's giving unpaid care. It's the decision to move someone into a higher level of care, whether that's an assisted living or a traditional nursing home, is a really heart-wrenching decision. And its finances play into that significantly.
Well, going back to what you were talking about before, I did a story a few years ago, and I don't know if it still exists here in Louisville. There was a thing called the Memory Cafe, where once a month, folks with Alzheimer's and their caregivers would meet for lunch. And then it was kind of a quiz show format where the person would ask various questions. I don't know if they still have it or not, but I thought that was a great way to keep not only to keep people exercising their minds, but also caregivers to
right.
get out and talk to other caregivers. Do you know if that still exists?
I don't know if that still exists or not, but your point is really well made, that this is about caregivers connecting to other caregivers and also people that are living with the disease to connect with other people living with the disease.
A couple of questions. We've got one on Twitter. My stepmother died 9 years ago from Alzheimer's disease. She was first diagnosed in her late 40s. I'm curious what advancements in treatment have happened over the past decade. And we touched on this earlier, Dr. Cooper, but there is a lot of research going on.
There really is a lot of research, and just the dollars for research have gone up significantly, I think largely due to advocacy efforts from the Alzheimer's Association. And we are seeing a lot of new treatments being developed in clinical trials. We're not seeing all of the results we want to. We don't have that treatment that we want. But there's without question a great deal of research, and I believe new treatments, not just the one that was approved over the summer, but other treatments, potentially even better, are on our horizon.
Is there anything close to what we will consider a cure on the horizon that's being developed long term?
I don't think that we have the cure necessarily on the horizon. My personal belief is that we're going to come up with better treatments, and we're going to do a better job of managing this as a chronic condition. I think in the more distant future, yes, we're going to have treatments that can stop this disease in its tracks. And at that point, there'll be an increased focus on diagnosing this illness even before it causes any symptoms. So, for example, it's often said that the underlying condition leading to Alzheimer's disease starts 20 years before we see symptoms. What I envision is someday having a treatment that can stop that in that pre-symptomatic phase before we even know we have the condition.
Tell us a little about the work you do at the at Norton at the Memory Institute.
That's a difficult question to answer, and I'm not trying to be evasive. We see ourselves trying to address things through essentially four different pillars. So first and foremost is clinical care. We want to provide expert diagnosis, and we want to help manage individuals with this illness. So we want to provide the very best clinical care we can. Second, we want to be a resource to the community. Alzheimer's disease, dementia, that's not really a condition of individuals as much as it is of families. And so we want to provide that support to the entire family and be a resource to our entire community. We intend to have an active research arm. Part of that is going to involve clinical trials. We want to bring trials to Louisville and allow those investigative treatments, allow access to that to the people of Louisville. We're also looking at very basic research. What are the underpinnings of dementia, and how can we prevent that before it starts? And then we also want to look probably in the next year or so at really focusing on prevention. As I stated earlier, 40% of dementia is thought to be preventable. Well, we want to start preventing that. We want to start knocking these numbers down by 40%. So that's a little more in the future, but not a very distant future, we hope.
502-814-TALK is our number, 502-814-8255. We're talking about Alzheimer's and dementia today with our guest, Dr. Greg Cooper, whose voice you just heard. He is with the Memory Center, medical director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute and chief of adult neurology at the Norton Neuroscience Institute. Shannon White is here from the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. And Dr. Heer Moon is associate professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. Another question sent in: how do you decide as a caretaker when you have to put someone in a nursing home and not try to continue taking care of them yourself at home? That's a good question and a dilemma, Shannon, that I assume many people face.
They do. And it, like Dr. Cooper said, it really is a family decision. And a lot of times we see that families wait too long to put their loved one in a higher level of care, which is just, it's a heart-wrenching decision to have to make in the first place. But I know from personal experience that my grandmother waited probably a little bit too long to put my grandfather into a higher level of care. And that's really what he needed. And so when he got into a higher level of care, they said, oh, does he dress himself and feed himself and bathe himself? Yes, yes, yes. Well, then 24 hours later, they called and said, we think that he needs a higher level of care than you're acknowledging. And she really struggled with that decision. And putting someone in an assisted living or a nursing home, it's heart-wrenching, but sometimes that is the care that they need. And so we try to encourage our caregivers to lean on others and to lean on us and support groups to help them make that decision for their family.
Well, let's talk about COVID-19 and the various effects it is having. I know Dr. Moon mentioned earlier about some of the research that she's done on the effects on caregivers. But Dr. Cooper, at this point, is there any research or is it too early to determine the effect of COVID-19 on people, perhaps exacerbating the development of Alzheimer's or dementia?
It's probably too early, but it's an area of active research. There is a great concern that this pandemic is going to increase the incidence of dementia. And we've actually seen that with prior pandemics, with other viruses or pathogens. After that pandemic, you'll see a rise in the number of dementia cases. So that is an area of active concern, not necessarily one we understand very well. In the more immediate sense, the isolation and the stress that has resulted from this pandemic has certainly had an impact on our loved ones with dementia and on our caregivers. And when you put caregivers under greater stress, we see greater problems with our individuals with dementia. So you see how this is all interrelated. And so we have seen a real exacerbation of the condition as a result of the pandemic.
Was there a drop or during the, I guess, what we called the first height of COVID and the subsequent spikes? And was there a drop in the number of people coming in seeking a diagnosis because they were isolating or worried about going out?
Yes, there was. There was both a drop in the willingness of people to come out and be diagnosed, and understandably, it was a scary time. But there was also a reluctance of individuals to come in and be seen even after a diagnosis when they were having problems. And we did do a reasonably good job of trying to help with that using telemedicine. But even then, that's a technology that was difficult for people to adopt. And so you saw people waiting too long to get the care they needed.
We are talking about Alzheimer's disease and dementia here on In Conversation on WFPL. Another note from a caregiver on Twitter: can you address the problem of family members who cannot seem to accept the diagnosis? One of my problems is a lack of support from members who refuse to accept the diagnosis and learn more. And I can see that coming up a lot too, Shannon White, with families, because this really has a ripple effect, doesn't it, on not only the illness itself, but all these other factors that come into play in families.
Absolutely. And we see that across the board, that people, not only are they struggling with their mom taking care of their dad or their dad taking care of their mom, but then there could be conflict within other family members about making these decisions and who's going to be the power of attorney and who can be a guardian and when do you make a decision for a higher level of care. And we do have programs and support groups for that as well.
What about your organization nationwide? Is there a robust support or resources available like we have here? Thank goodness with your organization. Is it something that you see across the country?
Yes, there are. There are chapters all across the country, and there's a national organization. As a national organization headquartered in Chicago, there are chapters all over the country that provide very similar supports and resources to families.
And Dr. Hira Moon, before we run out of time here, with the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville, how can people get more information about what you do or approach you about maybe being involved in some of your research?
So can you repeat it again? Repeat the question again?
How can people learn more about the various research that you've been doing or
actually
approach you about getting involved in it?
Yeah, of course. All the resources are available through our website, Kinscope Social Work at the University of Louisville. Also, you can Google my name or my colleague's name, and then you can email us. We're always available. So, I mean, if you send us, then we love to share our findings or research with anyone who is interested in our studies.
And, Shannis, give us some more details about the Alzheimer's walk tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow, Saturday, October 9th. It starts at 9 a.m. at Lynn Family Stadium, which is the new soccer stadium downtown. You can find more information at alz.org/walk. And we have about 180 teams that are registered. And like I said before, it's such an amazing community support event that just gives family inspiration and empowers them to get more involved and get the support and resources that they need.
And Dr. Greg Cooper, I know there is the Norton Institute here in Louisville, but there are many other organizations and healthcare providers that provide assistance with Alzheimer's, not only our community but across the state, right?
That's absolutely correct.
And how can we find out more about your what you do at Norton?
I think the easiest for us would be to again go to nortonhealthcare.org. And search Alzheimer's disease or memory center, and you'll get right to us.
All right. I want to thank all of you for joining us as we have still a little bit of time left. Let me come back to you, Shannon, and ask you about, actually, I want to talk to you, Dr. Cooper. One thing I overlooked is there anything that patients can do or caregivers can do to slow the progression, the like exercises? We talked about the memory cafe,
yeah.
Things like that they can do every day.
There is some data to suggest regular exercise. It doesn't have to be high impact, but even just walking 5 days a week. There is some support for diet following a Mediterranean or what's called the MIND, M-I-N-D diet can be helpful. And then certainly being socially active and making sure that your general health is good. All of those things potentially can slow the progression of conditions like this.
All right. I want to thank all of you for joining us again. Dr. Greg Cooper, Medical Director of the Memory Center at the Norton Neuroscience Institute, Shannon White with the Greater Kentucky and Southern Indiana Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, and Dr. Heer Moon, Associate Professor at Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. It's been a great conversation, and we've learned a lot today. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank our In Conversation production team, of course, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. Our local news is anchored by Bill Burton. Kojin Toshiro composed our opening and closing theme. And I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.